from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
What's up, everybody? It is the G and Ursula Show. Ursula, in the 9 o'clock hour, I think we laugh too much.
According to one person, he used the word cackling.
He did. I didn't want to bring you.
So I know that I have a cackle.
Yeah.
And apparently there's another host that drives him batty with a cackle. And now he said we need to grow up, being a clown show, yeah, and stop laughing. So I'm going to try for you right now to be much more serious than the 10 o'clock
hour. Let's be more serious. This is going to be baked chicken breast and broccoli with no cheese, 10 o'clock hour.
I want to say, we warned you, though. We said it could be Wacky Wednesday. You don't know what to get segment for segment.
Somebody's upset about me wearing sunglasses every day, too.
I know.
All right. Let's get to it. What's new at 10?
What's new at 10?
So the question for you this hour is, should prison inmates pay for family visits? And then here's another question. If you don't have insurance, should you be able to renew your car tabs? I've got my answers, but we are going to get the details on what is happening in Olympia with these very questions. Matt Markovich is covering everything that has to do with Olympia, and he joins us live right now. Good morning.
Good morning, Ursa. I guess you bring on Matt Markovich and no more cackles for the next 20 minutes,
okay,
right?
Okay, see? You're messing me up.
By the way, Matt, I just want you to know, you and I bonded yesterday, bro.
You did. You did.
We bonded.
You did. Okay, but let's get to it. Let's talk about this proposal regarding inmates and whether they should pay for family visits.
Yeah, so you think this may not be controversial, but it was pretty controversial when it passed the House, 64-34, and it's in the Senate now, because, and that's why I bring it up, because there was some dissent on this. Now, just to bring you up to speed, inmates earn 42 cents. We're talking about state prison inmates at the 15 correction facilities in the state. They earn 42 cents an hour when they do work at the prison, and they use that money to buy certain things, and many of them are privileges, and that states in the state law says that they have to earn their privileges and with their money that they earn in the prison, and things that they can buy are work release programs, cable TV, weightlifting, recreational sports. They also have to be in, show good behavior in order to use these things, and one of those big ones is an extended family leave visit. That is, you have to pay for that, and it costs $5 a day. They have these cottages on the prison grounds where family members can come and meet with the inmate for either a minimum of 20 hours, a maximum of 48 hours. It costs $5 a day, and a weekend is $15. So that's equivalent, that's 36 hours of work they have to do in the prison to earn that. So there's a bill now saying, you know, if we want to rehabilitate people who are in the prison, we should allow them to have more connection to their families, and let's just make it free. No more cost at all to have extended family visits. You don't have to earn it anymore. We want that connection because when they get out of prison, they need that family bond. So that's the question is, as that was being proposed by the lawmakers, is should it these visits be free?
Okay, let's start with you, G. Should they be free?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, homework assignment, watched the movie 13th on Netflix, if you ever get a chance. The 13th Amendment, which is the amendment, obviously, about the abolishment of slavery, but it's also the amendment that still allows for slavery as a punishment for a crime. And I want to just simplify as this. The reason why we have the recidivism rate that is so high oftentimes is because we try to just make folks that go to prison that have done wrong, we just forget that at some point they're going to be released to society. And when they get released to society and they have no connection, and then when they release to society, they have no money. They have no ways of making money. And while they were in prison and here in the state of Washington, and I'm glad you brought that up, you said, was it 40 some cents?
42 cents an hour.
42 cents an hour.
A day.
For
Do you say a day?
No, an hour.
No, 42 cents an hour. It's that, yes, $5 a day.
So, yes. So here you are, and you're trying to buy all those things. You're trying to buy toiletries. You're trying to buy all of these different things. So the answer is this on this specific topic. Yes, make it free for family to go and visit their family in prison. What are we trying to do? Don't we want them to be rehabilitated? Don't we want them to connect with people on the outside? Or do we want them to have no connection, work for the 42 cents an hour, and then when you get out of jail, we say, hey, can you please do better in society?
But it's also a carrot and stick thing. If you, this is one of the most sought after privileges, and if you make it free, do they have that sense of they're not going to earn what they should earn a privilege by spending the money just like you and I? How do you want to get
wage.
Something done?
Then pay a minimum wage. Right now in the state of Washington, we have 1,600. I think there was 1,600, right, when it comes to Department of Corrections. Then pay them more.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of paying inmates minimum wage, but I am in favor for all the reasons that you mentioned, G, for allowing for the family visits. 42 cents an hour is obviously nothing. And I do believe that there needs to be some rehabilitation in prison as well as punishment. And I know that for people who might be against something like this, it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, they need to do their time. And as you said, Matt, the family privilege is a big privilege. But I think that there are other consequences of removing that. So but here's a question just real quick, as long as we're talking about this, because I mentioned it in the last hour, Matt. Would there be any reason that inmates couldn't do something like work release to clear graffiti from the freeway overpasses and underpasses and bridges, et cetera?
Well, there are DOC teams. I've seen them out there in these camps a couple years ago in Seattle. I think maybe it's gotten kind of worse now in these camps. They don't bring them out. But the DOC crews do go out and do that kind of stuff.
Do they the graffiti removal?
No, I don't necessarily know about graffiti removal. I don't know about that specific thing, but they do come out and clean up stuff, trash along the highways, in the homeless camps. That was a regular routine for them.
Okay. Well, that's my suggestion, I guess, to DOC and the state, should they be looking for suggestions. Okay. So go ahead.
If not 42 cents an hour and not minimum wage, what pay per hour do you think prisoners should get?
Well, I think the 42 cents an hour is not reasonable. I mean, it's more token. I mean, it's showing that you have to earn something and pay for it. And you can pocket this money. I mean, if you don't have to buy, if you don't you want to stay in prison and not do any privileges, that's money you've earned. But it's not a significant amount. It's not intended to be an amount to actually pay for everything. Although the legislation says it should be, quote, a significant amount toward the capital cost of these like weightlifting and recreational sports and extended. It says that, but in reality, it's not. And so the argument actually in the arguments is that the DOC said, yeah, we like this idea because the actual time it took to collect the money and the paperwork and stuff wasn't even worth our time at 42 cents an hour. So that's where they sat.
Ah, okay. Let's move on to insurance and car tabs. Should you be required to have insurance before you can renew your car tabs?
Well, that's what's going to happen here. So there's a bill that does a couple things. It's following along a lot of states who had to have what's known as an online, real-time, electronic auto insurance verification system. We do not have that in the state, but it's wanted. And one of the reasons why they want it is to get rid of people who don't have insurance. A couple years ago, according to the people who testified, they didn't say what time frame, but I think it was about 10 years ago, one out of 25 drivers on our state highways was uninsured. It's now 1 in 5. It's gotten worse. And as you know, it's a mandatory law that you have to have auto insurance here. So starting January 1st, 2026, when you go and renew your tabs online or go one of the licensed places, you have to show proof of insurance. Otherwise, you cannot renew your tabs. Because it's mandatory. And with this online verification system, they want to be able to catch you, that you can't just fake it. Cops will have this. The one group that won't have it, that wants it, is car dealers, because when you show up and drive off the lot, you know, you're assuming that the person has car insurance. That's a big bugaboo for car dealers. They don't like this bill because of that. But that's the law. Should you the idea, again, the intent is to remove people who are uninsured driving on the highway, so that when you renew your tabs, if you don't have proof of liability insurance, you don't get your tabs.
So just as to clarify, this is a done deal. So this
is being proposed. No.
Okay.
So we're talking about it.
Okay. So let's talk about that. G, are you in favor of that?
Oh, y'all know I missed work last week for 3 days. I'm still not right. You know what I mean?
With your pinched nerve in your neck.
Yeah. And it's still bad. I got rear-ended, was that like 3-4 months ago, 3 months? And I am still dealing with it now. Absolutely. You cannot get your car tabs unless you show proof of insurance. And by the way, you go to buy a car now, they're not even letting the car off the lot now these days without proof of insurance.
Yeah, I am 100% in favor of this as someone also who has been hit twice in the past year by uninsured drivers. So the statistic you shared, Matt, is both alarming but not surprising. Mm-hmm. Just because of my personal experience, the number of people who are driving without insurance. And I get that it may be because you can't afford it. But again, if you get into trouble, or imagine, if you decided to go after this person or try to go after this person who hit you, I mean, how much deeper trouble that person would be in for lack of insurance. You shouldn't be driving around if you don't have insurance. Period. Well,
it's against the law. And the idea is that, you know, when you get pulled over, like I was recently, and you have to show proof of insurance, you know, you give them your little slip, and and there's no way for the cop to actually go on a database and verify that. There isn't a system right now.
It's 2023. They can easily put barcodes on there, and law enforcement can have a little scanner deal to boop.
Well, our state's behind. There's several states that are already doing this, and they're trying to implement that system here, but we don't have it.
2026 would be the earliest? Man, this needs to happen yesterday. Like, I'm talking right now with pain in my neck, and I'm mad.
Well, even if they pass this, G, what's going to happen is it's a one-year pilot program, so they're going to run it. See if it gets up and running, not require that you have to show proof of insurance. If the online system's working, then they'll kick in and you have to have it by 2026. So starting 2025, that's when the system's going to be up and running. So yes, you're right. It's going to be a delay, but that's how government works, I guess.
206 just texted in and said, regarding this car insurance issue, what's it going to matter since the police will not pull people over now for having expired tabs? One more reason and why I would be in support of continued traffic stops.
That's not a law yet, though.
Yeah. Well, in this law, in this particular bill, it says this is still a secondary offense. So you cannot pull somebody over
as
a primary reason because their auto insurance is not there.
Ah, okay. We got one more. Catalytic converters. I remember about a year ago, or maybe it was 2 years now, when we would talk about catalytic converter theft every single day, it seemed. Is it still a huge problem, and is there a fix for it in Olympia?
Here's the short answer. No.
There's no fix, or it's no longer a problem.
Well, it's still a huge problem. It's an increasingly big problem. It's involving organized crime now. You have people, there's about 10 that they estimate. If you they have the auto wreckers, these are the guys who actually recover these legitimately, and they said there's 10,000 to 20,000 that are stolen from them every year. About 200,000 get turned into auto wreckers, you know, by cars who have end their life, and that's the problem here. This bill that's talking about is that they want to have recyclers, people, auto wreckers who actually deal with catalytic converters. They have to be licensed to accept them. Like you put a license in the window, and if you go to one of these places and they don't have a license, they can't buy it from you. And because already there's a law that passed 2 years ago, it was in effect last year, where if you show up at one of these dealers and want to turn in a car catalytic converter for some money, you have to get the VIN number of the car it came from. You have to get the license as well as the driver's license of the person bringing it in. It has to match up. There's already regulations in it. So this bill, though, to make it a license that require a license from recyclers to accept these catalytic converters, it got virtually no support, good online support, but no testifying, people testifying against it. Even the police said that it's flawed. And the towers said it's going to make the problem worse. So the problem with the police, what I thought was interesting, they said that when they can pull over somebody who has maybe a truckload of catalytic converters in their back, without a victim, they can't arrest that person. They can say, that looks like stolen property, but we don't know where it came from. No one's reported it stolen yet because it's in the middle of the night. We can't do anything about it. So the police say that the theft laws in the catalytic converters need to be changed. So that's what's being discussed. It's moving through the legislature, but that's where it sits.
Oh, sorry. Matt, thank you, brother. Really appreciate you coming on with us. Look forward to hanging out with you again. You didn't get us riled up today, man.
Well, you know, it's that face-to-face thing. You know, I need to see you face-to-face sometime.
Yeah, and you didn't bring up sausage today.
Yeah,
we're trying to keep it serious, though, because Matt, we've been told that we are too cheerful.
Well, you know what? I just did my job. I think for 20 minutes, nobody cackled.
Nope.
Yeah, there's no cackling involved in this.
Nope. Segment.
Take care, Matt. See you later, brother. That is Matt Markovich. He does a phenomenal job when he comes on with us. Hey, coming up next, you ever have things going on where things are going too good and you're like, I'm nervous? That's the Seattle Seahawks offseason so far. So we're going to bring in Mike Salk to explain to us why things are going so good for the Seattle Seahawks. We do all that next. Generously. Host of the Brock and Salk Show. You can listen to that show from 6 to 10 a.m. on Seattle Sports Station. He's one of the people, no, he's actually the person that hired me into this industry, and he joins us right now. Good morning, Mike Salk.
I'm never going to live that one down, apparently.
Hey, I just want you to know, on the Gene Ursula Show, I am never asked to introduce anybody. So when we have all the people on the show, guests, I never get asked. But when you come on a show, that's the only time I get asked to bring someone on. So I just want to say that's good news.
Okay, and just since we're putting it out there, since we're putting all our business out there, the reason I asked that, G, is because I love the rapport that you and Mike have. And as much as you guys try to pretend that you dislike each other, I see you every morning. Yeah, and I see the bro hugs and the whole bit. So I just want to share that.
I don't like them.
I got the air too.
I got a rapport with the mayor, Bruce Harrell.
You do?
Okay. Hey, Mike Salk, check this out. Why is the Seahawks offseason going so well? What is going on? Well, I'm nervous.
Because they're not the New York Jets and they're not the Green Bay Packers. That's certainly helpful. I don't know if you've been following Aaron Rodgers' little report here in the course of the last half hour, but
what happened?
He's emerged from darkness, and he is no longer interested in being with the Packers. He's blaming them for trying to trade him and now for holding up the deal, and says he wants to go to the Jets. So you'll be hearing about it nonstop, I would think, over the course of the next 24 hours. As for the Seahawks, they're doing what they need to do. They had one gigantic problem last year, and that's that their defensive line was trash. And they spent the beginning of free agency clearing out some of the guys that were making money on that defensive line and not living up to the contract, and then going to spend it on a couple players that they believe can do that. They brought in Draymond Jones from Denver, spent more money on him than they have on any free agent in over a decade.
What college did he go to?
I'm not sure. Somewhere in the Midwest, I want to say, right?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, just checking. And then they brought back Jaron Reed as well, old friend who'd been with the Seahawks before and then went to Kansas City and Green Bay and now is back here in Seattle. So two guys that they think can be more effective on that defensive front. It's exactly what they needed to do.
So why does that make you nervous, G? And how should, I want to ask you that, but then I want to ask Mike, how should the rest of us feel?
Well, let me just take you back to a year ago. A year ago today, right? How were we feeling about the Seahawks during that time? As a matter of fact, I'll take you to every March for the last almost 8 years. Probably the last March that I felt really good about a Seahawks upcoming season was March of 2015. Now, Mike Salk, you cover this stuff more than I do. Your thoughts?
No, I think that's accurate. They also, you know, haven't advanced past the first round of the playoffs in any of those years either. So, you know, it's time for them to make some changes. It started a year ago with the Russell Wilson trade. It continued with a tremendous draft class. And now it's got to, you know, continue here into the future with free agency and then another draft coming up in 5 or 6 weeks. So, yeah, I don't know that there's any reason to be nervous. I mean, you get nervous when teams try to completely remake who they are through free agency. To me, remaking your team overnight is generally not going to work. And we've seen that years ago in Philly. We've seen the Raiders try that, where they try to just win the offseason by bringing in so many new faces and big names. And generally, I think that tends to blow up in teams' faces. And then they're stuck trying to deal with the remnants of those contracts, and it never goes well. I don't think the Seahawks are doing that. I think they are spending some money. They are going after trying to be much better in some places that were important for them to do so. And they're spending it on the key positions, not on the back end, not on the outside. They're spending it up front on defense, which is exactly what I think they should be doing.
Okay, so someone who used to play for the Seahawks, there was talk about bringing him back, Bobby Wagner. Is that going to happen?
It's certainly a possibility. You know, he hasn't signed anywhere yet. It sounded like Dallas was another option for him, and then they signed somebody to play the position. So, yeah, I think it's a real possibility. But, again, the reason Bobby was let go a year ago was because of money. And so I don't know exactly where these two sides are at. I think Bobby would like to play here, and I think the Seahawks would like to have him play here. But I think the number at which that would occur is probably a little different from one side to the other.
Okay, one other question that I have, because they signed Geno Smith to a contract extension, but he's not necessarily the future of the Seahawks, is he? Are they going to bring on another quarterback?
I think, well, they have to bring on at least one more, because right now he's the only guy on the team. So whether that means bringing back Drew Lock or drafting somebody this year, they're going to need at least one more quarterback just to fill out the roster. As for Geno and being the future, you know, I think some of that is up to him. This is a 3-year deal, but the Seahawks can get out of it after 1 or 2 years. So is it really a 3-year deal? Not really, right? I mean, it sort of depends on how they feel. And basically what they have right now is complete flexibility, Ursula, to do whatever they want. If they want to draft a quarterback at the number 5 pick, they can do it. If they want to trade up a couple picks, they could do it. If they want to go defense and continue to make that better and stick with Geno for a few years, they can do that. If they want to draft a quarterback in the second or third round, Hendon Hooker is a name that we've heard a little bit from Tennessee, they can do that. So honestly, their options are almost limitless right now because of the flexibility in Geno's contract and because of the moves they've made already here in free agency.
What would you do? What would you? You're the Seattle Seahawks. You're the GM. You wake up in the morning. You're the GM. You got to make a decision. The city of Seattle, the National Football League, is watching. What do you do if you're the GM of the Seahawks at number 5?
I'll throw a few names at you. Before I do anything, I'm going to do a few things in free agency. I'm going to go talk to Leonard Floyd, who's an outside linebacker, edge rusher, who comes from the Rams the last few years, and I'm going to try to sign him. Then I'm going to reach out to another guy who used to play for the Seahawks. Yes. Frank Clark, and I'm going to try to see if Frank has any interest in coming back, if you can get him at the right price. And then I'm going to call Adam Thielen, who's been a wide receiver with the Vikings, who was let go, and I'm going to talk to him as well to see if I can improve that part of my game. When I get to the number 5 pick, G, assuming I was able to do some of those things, if I have a chance to draft a quarterback that I think is great, and I don't know whether John believes that about any of these quarterbacks in the draft, but if he does, I'm willing to trade up to get it, because I think if you've identified somebody that you think is the future of your franchise, don't let the person, the team or two in front of you take them.
Come on.
If you want Anthony Richardson or Bryce Young or CJ Stroud, then trade up to get them. And I'd be very curious to see if that's the way this goes.
That's why you're the best in the business, Mike Salk. You know, you're really good at this.
Thanks, buddy. That's nice.
See, there was another chest bump, but you just didn't see it.
Yeah. I can't believe you call those bro hugs, Ursula. Those are real legitimate hugs. Bro hugs are sort of half, you know, half-hearted little taps. These are full-on get in there and you know, really hug. That's just because I want to smell G every day.
Don't need to hug for that one.
have you ever hugged Mike Salk?
No.
He's a really good hugger. Salk, you give some good hugs, bro.
I do like a good hug, but, you know, you got to be careful who you're hugging. I mean, you know yeah. Problems.
Yeah. Well, we don't hug on the third floor. We hug on the second floor. Now, if we hugged on the third floor, it'd be a problem.
Yeah. That's when you get hauled into HR.
Yeah. All right. Have a good one. Talk to you soon. That is Mike Salk. He's from Seattle Sports Station. You listen to his show Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Coming up, we're going to do scenarios and find out how the mama-in-law is a snoop. Gene Ursula. Hey, good morning, everybody. Let's get right to scenarios.
Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
My mother-in-law moved in with us a month ago. I began to notice the furniture being rearranged. Okay, I guess she feels like she lives here, too, so I didn't say anything about it. Then things started to be moved around. Like, I would notice things in the bedroom kind of moved, and I noticed details a lot. I felt like I was going crazy because my husband is the only one who has access to the bedroom, and he doesn't really touch anything. I figured it must be his mom snooping. So I installed a camera in the bedroom so I can see if I could catch her in the act. Got her the next day on video, but I couldn't convince my husband she was doing anything weird. So I got one of those fake positive pregnancy tests and threw it in the bedroom's trash can. The next day, I got calls and texts from my in-laws congratulating me on my pregnancy. My husband was all worked up about it and asked when I learned I was pregnant and why I didn't tell him. I asked how he found out, and he said his mom found the positive test in the trash can in the bedroom. I asked if his answer just confirmed that she's been snooping in our bedroom. He had me take an actual test in front of him, and he was livid, asking how could I lie about such a thing and break his mom's heart like that. Now he, his mom, and his family are calling me the liar and a manipulator. Is this my fault? And what should I do about this? 888-973-5476 is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, this is a good scenario.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so I'm going to start with mother-in-law, first of all. Mother-in-law moves in. You move in, you don't have the right to snoop, in particular, in your son and daughter-in-law's bedroom. So that would be the one thing. And you don't have the right to rearrange things, unless it's in your own room that you have, you know, been told, hey, this is your space, do with it what you will, and then you can do that. Otherwise, you ask permission. Even though it's family, you ask permission before you move stuff around, because you're being presumptuous that your daughter-in-law or your son would want that furniture moved. So first things first, mother-in-law was wrong. But then daughter-in-law is wrong. The woman who I'll tell you why. Instead of confronting and being adult about it,
she told her husband.
And by the way, husband is really weak, okay? Has no backbone.
Okay.
But I'm going to say now, because the wife did not say, hey, look, we got to do something. And then she concocts this thing where it's based on a lie. And then, again, I say mother-in-law is wrong. But now you've got this other problem that you've got to deal with.
She told the husband, and the husband wasn't listening.
Yes.
Nobody would listen.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I will say this based on personal experience and other experience.
Okay.
I think if you're having issues with your mother-in-law, it shouldn't just be your husband that brings it up. You also have the ability to bring it up. Especially if husband, and again, I say husband is weak in this.
On a scale of 1 to 10, Ursula.
Yeah, mother-in-law's mostly.
On a scale of 1 to 10, as far as violation.
Yes.
Where would you rank it where anyone comes into your room. Like, if I came to visit your house, you and Long Live Mark, and went to the restroom, on a scale of 1 to 10, if you caught me in your room, and I'm like, oh, I was just admiring your room.
Digging through your garbage.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's a violation.
Yeah. Yes, that is.
That's a 10.
Yes, you, that is a 10.
There is no reason
to
be in somebody's boom boom room. Chef.
Sorry, you caught me off guard with that. The boom boom room. I love it. I'm going to start calling it that. Divorce your family. I'm serious. If you have a husband that can't believe you on something as simple as, hey, my mom is snooping through our stuff while she's living with you, you don't have a partner that supports you.
Thank you.
And if their entire family is blaming you for the fact that mom is digging through your trash and lying about it, and your husband doesn't believe you, and they think this is your problem? No. Get rid of them all.
Yeah. I agree.
Moving all this furniture, snooping through trash, going to all these people's backs behind their backs. There's just too much blame to go around right now. I think Chef's on the right track. You might have to get blacklisted from the family in this case. There's no turning back in this bad boy.
Okay, wait. Okay.
Divorce them all.
Am I the only one that doesn't think divorce them all, but at least have that conversation before you go in, as far as, you know, doing a fake pregnancy test and all that business?
Can you
not have that conversation directly with your mother-in-law and say, look, I'm not comfortable with you being in the bedroom?
I'm going to keep it a buck with you.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed in you. The fact that you just said you put any of this on the wife. There should be nothing on her. She told her husband, yo, I think your mama in here snooping. And he blew it off. So she put a test. There is no reason for the mom-in-law to be in there. Get your nosy ass out of there.
I agree with that. I said I 100% agree with that. I mostly blame mom-in-law. But I would have had a conversation before I went as far as now putting a fake pregnancy test in the garbage can.
According to Ursula, if you get caught cheating and somebody checked to find out, they shouldn't have been looking. All right. That was a fun one. That was a fun one to do. Coming up next, agree to disagree. We'll have some fun behind that. It's Gene Ursula.